Welcome to Horrorspiria. My name is May, and today we have a very special guest on. This is our first repeat guest, actually. She came on back when I was a nobody, and now I'm still a nobody. But we do different things now, so I want everyone to welcome, please, Gabrielle Tillenberg.
Hi, you're not a nobody, let's be real. But I do understand the humility, but no, you're not a nobody at all. I'm just really happy to be back. We've been talking about doing this again for a while.
Yeah, and last time we spoke, which I think was on the pod, we talk all the time. But last time we spoke on the pod, it was in 2018, I think, actually.
So really?
Yes, because we did it at the Clinton house, right?
Yes, you're
and
right.
And Darko was still alive, not to be depressing, right? Yeah, it's so that was 2018. Yeah.
Look, well, I mean, congrats to you for this ongoing project. Still alive, still kicking.
Back then I was just like doing, you were very early on, but now I'm in a PhD program and you also have a new job. So before you were one of the curators at Strathmore, right?
Yeah. So before entering the graduate school that I'm in now, I was curating and coordinating exhibitions. Now I'm also doing the PhD life like you in art history. So film adjacent, I'm working with video art half of the time. So it's still film adjacent, but I'm happy to indulge again and flex those film muscles, which I talked about last time, which is always fun to do with you because you're fully immersed in it. And I think sometimes I get a little jealous because we can't do everything, right? We can't like pursue all the fields, but I'm really excited to be able to chat specifically about horror with you.
How have you been enjoying your art history track?
It's been great. I've been able to focus on New York, which is really fun. I mean, it's not everything that I'm looking at, but, you know, both of us are Puerto Rican and have interest in studying Puerto Rican topics as it relates to our individual fields. So I'm excited to be studying artist practices sovereignty, particularly in Puerto Rico. So really that I will say in Puerto Rico, but now I'm expanding also to consider other places colonized by the U.S. So I really love that I get to fight the U.S. empire through scholarship. Really, I had a shower thought the other day where I thought, did I get into art history because I just like politics? It's very possible, but this is my political outlet. This is what it's become.
It's funny. I've like slowly had that realization too. I was like, oh, the cultural theorists are like the Marxists. We're here trying to like, I guess, figure it out. But no, yeah, that's so exciting. And you also had something published recently, no?
Yeah, I did. The title of the article was On and Under U.S. Occupation, Women Artists in Japan and Puerto Rico. And it really specifically looked at women artists in Okinawa, which prior to grad school, I had no clue that Okinawa had been formally colonized by Japan first, and then became a very heavily impacted site occupied by the U.S. Army. So I learned so much in my first semester of grad school alone. So it's really exciting to be able to find new pathways.
That is exciting. Yeah. So that's dope. Gabby teaching us all about art history. We know nothing about art history on this pod. So you could come.
Film history is art history too. So
yeah, that's true. but today we have a theme which you kind of plucked out of nowhere, which I kind of enjoyed. The theme, do you want to introduce the theme? How would you like to?
Sure. I'm just excited. I think if I come back on the pod in another few years, I'm excited to continue just to focus on women, because you know that one of my avenues into horror is feminist film theory. That's what I enjoy. So we talked last time about The Final Girl, and now we're going to be talking about motherhood, which is another woman-centered topic. I will say that
people can be mothers and not be women. So let's just get that out there, right? But I think looking again through this feminist film history lens is going to be really interesting to approach this topic. And you had some great recommendations for movies to talk about. So I'm very excited because I have come off freshly watching a couple of them. And I'm feeling it. Let's do it.
Yeah, I love that whenever you do come on here, you do have an idea for a feminist theme, because it is one of my favorites that isn't really that theorized into horror overall. So, but yeah, I chose two of my favorite films, which is La Llorona, directed by Jairo Bustamante from Guatemala. It is currently making the award show rounds as best foreign language film. I think Minari is going to win it, though, which Minari definitely deserves awards, but it's bullshit. It's racist.
I don't understand why it's a foreign film consideration. Why is it just in the American category?
Because it's in a foreign language. And if you actually do notice the category, it doesn't say foreign film. It says foreign language. But I mean, that's racist. It's an American film, you know?
You know what I want to see happen? What? I want to see a movie done in a Indigenous American language. And
oh my God, what is that going to happen?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I mean, what's a foreign language? We don't have a national language. So just because it's in that, no. Yeah, I think anyway, we're both on the same page.
Yeah. And Mother, which is actually a really controversial choice. I think, I don't know if you liked it, but it's one of my favorite films. I think it's, I realized that biblical horror, like actual biblical horror, is one of my favorite subgenres, but not many people do it well. Everyone thinks like an exorcism is biblical horror, but Mother is one of those examples where I was like, oh my God. I think Aronofsky, and that came out in 2017, directed by Darren Aronofsky. And I think Aronofsky's pitch for that film was he wanted to create a God that repented. And man, what a concept.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know anything of what it was about, really. I had seen the cover for it and just admired the art. I knew Jennifer Lawrence is in it. I had no clue what it was about. And I do like going into films that way. And I really loved it and was really surprised afterwards to see the low ratings. The film, because it was extremely effective. I mean, first of all, the cinematography was amazing. And I'm so glad you saved me. For those listening, I almost watched it cropped for TV and I cringed.
I freaked out. I literally said, she sent that text and I think the only thing I said was no.
Yeah. You did say there's no way. You need to just cough up the money and
because
pay for it's, a rental.
It's,
and I'm glad.
Yeah, no, it's graphic too. And graphic in ways that you may not expect. I walked into that film. I had seen the trailers and the trailers made it look like a very solitary film, but it actually isn't at all.
It escalates. Well, it does. I mean, that's part of the horror of it. You want to be alone. I cannot tell you how much I related. I mean, I know that it's biblical horror and that it's an allegory and that the horror lies in sort of this relationship that we can get into, right? Between mother, whether it be, I guess, if we want to consider her Mary or Mother Earth or whatnot, and God, the creator. But nothing is more horrific to me than having a dream home and nesting in it and having people come and fuck it up. That is the worst possible thing that could happen to me, especially in a party situation.
Yeah.
No.
It works so well on a base level. Like, even if you didn't know about the Bible, I mean, like, I feel like the allegory is a little obvious, but say that you didn't know anything about the Bible, I think it's just kind of like a good story on madness. So I'm really stoked to talk about those films. But I guess before we get too sucked into either of them, it's interesting, this theme of the mother, because the mother isn't treated the same way in both of these films.
That's true. And I guess we haven't mentioned the third one that we do want to touch on, which is The Babadook, which...
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Right, yeah. Which is one that I think is easily left out in talking about the two, because Mother and La Llorona are so good, and we have some criticisms about Babadook, but they all are treating motherhood so differently.
Yeah.
And I think there's... these particular criticisms of expectations of motherhood and femininity in general, the quote female role in mother, but in La Llorona, it's used very differently. It's a very different situation. It's the grieving mother. And in Babadook, we kind of get a bit of the grieving mother, but it's more about the relationship with the child and grieving the partner. It's not grieving the child in that relationship.
It's almost interesting to think about each film in the sense of who's our protagonist in each film. I think Mother is pretty obvious. You know, we're supposed to root for Mother. In The Babadook, it's the mother and her child. They're sort of dealing with this entity that they don't really know what it is. And then in La Llorona, like, it gets a little interesting there, right? Because technically the monster is sort of the justified protagonist.
Yeah, absolutely. I told you, I texted you, it was 15 minutes in, La Llorona hadn't even shown up yet, and I was already rooting for her.
Yeah.
I was already like, yeah, I see where she's coming from already. I don't know her.
Yeah.
But I support her.
Yeah. And actually the themes are different. Really different for each film. Like La Llorona to me is pretty much a political film. Absolutely. Mother, as you said, the thing about Mother is that there's three different interpretations. There is the biblical one, which is pretty straightforward. I sent you an article that had all the references and it goes pretty deep. Like there's actually like, you can trace all the way down to the stain in the house. And I think that that's pretty cool. Then there's like a Mother Nature element, which is almost the same. Not quite, but yeah. But the third interpretation that I don't think you know even a little bit about, and it's one of my favorites. Darren Aronofsky was married to Rachel Weisz for years and years and years. And a little bit before this movie was released, they divorced. She went with Daniel Craig. She's married to Daniel Craig now. But a lot of people think that this movie is based on their marriage, on him being, so it's more... So it also has a level of filmmaking and how filmmaking itself sort of destroys the muse, which Rachel also was in a lot of his films. And I think all three work at once.
Absolutely.
And then The Babadook is sort of, it has always been quoted as like a story of depression.
Yeah. I think in Mother, I definitely saw this idea of the artist as creator and his muse. And I think it really gets down to this, which, I mean, part of me is like, wow, a man made this and is acknowledging this. It's a man artist made this, right?
Because well,
there's that trope of like the man as artist creator believes he's God and, you know, needs this muse to work with.
Yeah.
But they suck the life out of her. I mean, we saw that happen in film school.
Yeah. But I mean, you're right that a lot of the film is almost feminine because you're always supposed to root for her. I don't think the Javier Bardem, who plays the God figure, is ever painted in sympathetic light. But every single, I also rewatched Mother because I actually hadn't seen it in a while. And I was like, was this movie as good as I remember it? And it was. But when I rewatched it, I was like, man, Darren Aronofsky really thinks he's God though, right?
Basically, yeah.
Like it did feel a bit self-fulfilling, but then at the same time, I guess he is sort of dragging himself, but he also made a movie about it. I don't know.
I get you. It's kind of like when they talk about it, I think from our perspective, it would be, yeah, you're dragging yourself, but then you realize, oh no, you're not dragging yourself. You think this is okay. And you're just just sort of relishing in the
almost right?
and the toxicity of it. And I'm like, can we stop with like the male toxicity, indulging in the toxicity?
I don't think you know this either. I'm about to blow your mind again. During the making of that movie, he was dating. Oh, yep. You did know that. Okay.
Yeah. That
usually I tell you Jennifer the tea.
Lawrence. I saw that and I was like, oh.
Yeah. And it's funny. She actually was like famous for saying, I don't even understand what mother is, but I just listened to his direction. And I'm like, okay.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me.
Really? No, she's a bit of a moron. Like she just recently got married. No, listen. And with her new husband, she's like, he always likes to watch all these foreign films. And I'm like, why can't we watch Bravo? And
oh, I'm God.
Like, I know.
Okay. All right. Well, there's
killer performance though.
Absolutely.
I think that was her best performance in my opinion. Yeah.
Like that's mad meta.
It is.
Considering how she talked about the experience. I think it'd be different if she knew exactly what was going on. But that's
yeah. And she broke a rib during the shoot, which doesn't surprise me at
all. Like in the madness sequence.
I think I don't think she ever said what scene, but the part where they're ripping her apart, basically, I totally believe it happened there. Yeah. Hmm.
Interesting. Well, I wonder what you, sorry if you hear my cat, by the way. Hi. I wonder what you think about the Michelle Pfeiffer character and this interpretation of her as both Eve and the serpent, because she's also a mother in the film, but a terrible one.
Yeah. You know, the Michelle Pfeiffer character is, first off, I completely forgot she was in it until she popped up. I was like, yes. But I think in a way, it's also symbolic of like woman on woman. It's like commentary on women relationships in general, mm-hmm. Like a polarization. I think the movie Mother, more than anything, is just supposed to show how everyone uses mother. Though you're right, the Michelle Pfeiffer is, and then, you know, one of her children dies and she wants all of the sympathy. So there's also, and she's very judgmental of the Jennifer Lawrence character when she doesn't have children. So I wonder if like the Michelle Pfeiffer character is almost like the female complicity in a way within the patriarchal model, something like that.
No, absolutely. And I think particularly when she is criticizing the mother character for not having children, or, you know, at first not wanting children and then thinking she can't, and then it's because she can't, you know, because her husband is not interested in her. It's an interesting component to this allegory of creation, of thinking about the woman as creating for the benefit of man, you know, for the benefit of the father rather than for herself, despite the fact that she's creating a home. I mean, the entire time she was creating in her own right, but it was totally subservient to what he was working on.
She definitely is viewed, and even there's a part where he's like, I'm going to have someone to talk to about my work, and she's like, I talk to you about your work. And then he's like, yeah, I know you do, but clearly it's not the same to him. So I guess, how should we do this? What things struck you the most out of each of these films?
Well, I think with Mother, it was just this reversal in perspective, like as we've been talking about, really being from the mother's perspective, from the woman's perspective, in thinking about perhaps Mary and God. And for La Llorona, we talked briefly about it being about grief, but this political aspect, I thought a lot about how the people of Guatemala were represented by the protesters. And so I began to think about this idea of country is maybe not the right word, because I think it's more specifically about the violence against the indigenous group groups in Guatemala. But thinking about that particular group as a mother itself, right? How many people were grieving outside? And, you know, what does it mean to lose your children, not as just a person, but as a nation, right? So I really appreciated that. And then Babadook, you know, it's funny because I think we can get into how the Babadook trope was appropriated by the gay community, because I feel like there could be a very different reading of Babadook based on that, which I have a theory on I'd like to touch on. Yeah. But I think it's a different perspective because it is a privileged white woman going through what is, I mean, I'm sure a very difficult thing to do, losing your husband and then having a child that you have to care for, that, you know, you're alone in that, but you're also needing to grieve and this association with the birth of the child and the death of the father. But I think it speaks to this sort of, this experience of the single mother is completely alone in society and ostracized in some communities, but there's still a lot of privilege that goes along with that, that I think it is a one particular experience. It's not every single woman's, it's not every single mother's experience.
Yeah, and arguably, actually, the Babadook is the most famous slash, I guess it made the most money. It was a bit of a cultural phenomenon, whereas, Mother was almost panned. And La Llorona has gotten a lot of critical praise, but it's not being watched really by that many people. But the Babadook really sort of like hit a sort of like, I guess, cultural litmus point. And a lot of that, I'm sure, is because of the like blanket relatability, you know, it's very hegemonic in a very way, in a certain way. And it's interesting though. I personally don't like that film. I think you like it, but you also find problems with it. And one of my problems when I was watching is I just didn't really feel like the metaphor was that interesting. It felt really like obvious in a way, or like not subtle, and it's like I get it, but I also feel like the potentialities of exploring motherhood and gender, especially in that film, that is why when it did sort of get picked up and appropriated by the LGBT community, it just like made it a lot more fun. So you said that you have like a theory, right?
Yeah. Okay. So this is the alternative plot of Babadook, which I think would have been more interesting. So the Babadook, as we know, at some point it kind of turns and it becomes the figure of the deceased father, right?
Right.
So, but the father in this alternative Babadook scenario didn't die. The father left the woman left him because he came out to her, and now she's having to deal with the grief of that. And so in terms of how the Babadook became this icon for the gay community, I'm like, yes, this fits now. And she's having to deal with the grief of losing the partner in her sort of own limited understanding of what that is, right? I mean, this is not saying that that would be right in this scenario, but let's be real, this character is extremely flawed. And you know, in thinking about the suburban white mother's horror that it could be her husband leaving her, so that's where I was thinking it might be a little more interesting. But I do think the way they did that, as you said, I mean, I like it in the sense that, I mean, I don't love it, it's effective at what it does, and that's it, and you get it, and it was okay for I think I saw it at a film festival when it came out, and so
really?
Yeah, I saw it at the Florida Film Festival, so I also didn't pay for it. So maybe that's why I wasn't as critical of it.
2014, right? Or was it 2013?
I saw it in 2013. It was before it hit theaters, yeah.
That's so interesting. I didn't know that. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. You know, there's actually one thing I wanted to ask you in general about these films. And it's interesting because I just reread Mulvey's essay, Visual Pleasures, blah, blah. And it's funny, I think last time you were on here, we talked a little bit about Mulvey. She's just such a queen. But I was rereading it. And one of the most famous claims that essay makes is that there's like a Lacanian mode of viewing that spectators engage in when they're watching a movie, where the ideal eye, the self, is projected onto the male protagonist, which is like Mulvey setting out the theory of the male gaze. Now, sort of thinking along those lines, as female spectators and watching these movies, like, how do you think we can interpret a version of that? Or do we interpret a version of that within these films? Like, how do you think those films are effective within that framework?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, returning to Babadook briefly, the way that the husband is idealized and sort of sanctified, right? You know, right. The mother's very protective of his memory. She doesn't want to talk about him with anybody else. She, you know, it seems that she hasn't even looked at a photograph of him for some time, protective of his things, even to the child. The idea of looking to the patriarchal figure as the sort of ideal, fully complete self, and then that fracturing as the movie goes, you know, progresses, as she, you know, engages with the Babadook, like, as the dead husband. I mean, certainly we can look at that as grief. And I do appreciate at the end that the Babadook doesn't completely go away, that she kind of has to nurse it. I mean, that's what you have to do with real grief. I'm like, okay, fine. That's a cute metaphor. but, you know, I think the way that she accepts that brokenness is certainly fitting within that framework. La Llorona, I think, is really interesting to consider the mirror image in the water and how she is reflecting not the wholeness of the male figures, which in La Llorona they're, you know, former military generals and some of his or the military generals, like, compatriots, I guess. How they committed genocide, right? These are these people who are very flawed, but revered in society, imagined as this ideal patriarchal figure, and how La Llorona, the figure of La Llorona, bringing in water, flooding in bathrooms, or, you know, bringing the general to the pool. These are all invitations for them to look at themselves in the mirror and see this fractured self, or rather that she fractures that. She reflects back the truth of what these people represent. So I think that definitely applies. As for mother, I think I may need a little bit of help on that one.
No, you know, I love everything that you said so far. And I hadn't even really thought of I didn't rewatch La Llorona, but I saw it last year. So it's still relatively fresh in my mind, but now that you mention all of the water, it's very effective. And also, technically, La Llorona is two selves. You know, she's the ghost, supposedly, but she's this entity for the grief of all the indigenous people. But I think maybe a way to look at, I would argue that all of these are feminist films. The Babadook definitely gets a lot of credit for being a feminist film. Even though, funnily enough, of the three films, I somehow think it's the least challenging to the hegemony. But Mother and La Llorona, I think you did a really great job with La Llorona, but I think the interesting thing about Mother, and this may be giving Aronofsky too much credit, I'm not too sure if he was too intentional with this, but I think the interesting thing, if we're to look at Mother within like a Mulvey framework, is that she was the Grace Kelly, right? She was the perfect beauty almost. I mean, like he had that perfect image, but then through his own misrecognition, her image keeps breaking apart, and everything that she created, all her creations, keep fracturing and fracturing. And then he does a rebirth. And the interesting thing is the rebirth of the new perfection, the new beauty, is always just a little bit more different than the previous one. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not too sure. It's somewhere in there though. And yeah. I think in a way we're supposed to, and I think maybe this is why people didn't really like it too much, is I don't think they really understood it. There was like a disconnect, like, oh, but like, and I think what the movie really is more about is how women are used and how nature is used, and everything is to the man's all of the harm that happens in the world is to man's doing. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it may be generous, but rewatching it, I felt like that was one of the only, you know, takeaways you can really get from it.
Right. And I do think if we bring in sort of the mirror symbolism, you get a little bit of that in this crystal item that right. he uses to basically start the world anew. And
it's her heart.
It's her heart. And at the moment of its shattering is very much that Lacanian realization that not all of his creation is perfect, right? Because it's sort of exactly. the Adam and Eve blatant symbolism for the temptation of the apple.
Yeah.
But I think it's interesting if you then carry that into the way that they presented the infanticide, which was a little jarring, I will admit.
I wasn't sure whether to warn you. I never warned people about it.
I'm glad you didn't, because it would have lost its effectiveness. I probably would have been anticipating.
I gasped in the theater. I saw Mother in theater and I was like, oh,
I did too. I think I like very much physically leaned forward at that point. And the fact that that these fanatics who come to worship the writer, the creator figure.
The zealots. Subtitles, and they called them zealots.
Okay, so the zealots, right? So the fact that the zealots, kill this child and this frenzy of adoration and then consume it again with the allegory of the body of Christ shared for you, as they say in the Lutheran church in which I grew up. I think it's shared for you. It's something like that. Another fun note in the Lutheran church, they say, they greet people and say, may peace be with you. And you respond, you say, and also with you. So when Lutherans hear, may the force be with you from Star Wars, you will respond and also with you. it's a very That's uniquely funny. Like Lutheran nerd crossover. But you know, when the zealots consume this child and the body of the child is demonstrated as in pieces, that's very much again this fracturing, right? It's the perfect God, his son. So if we take that to mean Jesus as having part of God, but then not showing this ideal and being imperfect, I think it definitely fits a little, maybe a little too much. I don't know. There were some times where I went, like the altars in the home.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And then the Ash Wednesday where they're
putting ash
on zealots' foreheads. I went, I get it now.
I always think that too. That's kind of why I really like it. It's a bit hammy. I feel people don't realize it's a little bit funny because it's a little a little on the nose. That's why I'm like, if people don't get it, I don't know what to tell you.
Right. I know. Although I will say, I think what does it justice is that you sort of have the first half of the movie, maybe it's like the first two acts that, you know, it's very much about invading the space, like invading Eden, right. and the relationship. And so you can take it in different directions. Absolutely. Beyond biblical, that yeah. speak more to women's role in the home.
Yeah.
And
also so woman's role as muse. I think we kind yeah. of touched on this, but one thing yeah. that we haven't really, or like another piece of evidence to that is, after all of this like turmoil happens, the apocalypse happens, the zealots, they're like, but he loves you. You need to be here because he yeah. loves you. He can't be without you. Mm-hmm. And again, just sort of, and then that's why I sort of think that Mother really shows like the fracturing of the marriage stage, because you literally see that it's complete hell, but they're still telling her you have to be him, he can't be without you,
right.
And it really shatters that perfect God complex, because I truly don't think we're ever supposed to be empathetic towards him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think this, it's like the second half goes full biblical, that it almost feels in some ways two movies, and I think that's what saves it from being a little too hammy.
Yeah.
But no,
I really
you're
like
right.
The end though, where, because almost the end isn't even biblical, where I try to remember what she said, where she was like, you just took all my love what more can you take? And he's like, I need your heart in order to do this mm-hmm. again. And she's like, oh, well, I'll like give you everything. I gave you everything. And that still wasn't enough. And he's like, I know.
There's that little bit of love.
There's that. Yeah. Until she's like completely sucked out of it. Yeah, for mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah.
So like, what do you think overall this like theme of mothers, you know, either through these films or especially using mother as a trope within the horror genre, like what do you think we can read into it?
Well, I certainly think back to Rosemary's Baby, which I think is one of the like epitome movies about addressing motherhood. And that was very much, you know, at the time, thinking about the anxieties of not having rights to abortion and reproductive rights, and becoming more independent. But I think, you know, we come to this again and again, right? That horror is addressing societal anxieties.
Right.
And motherhood is something that is continuously changing, because we're not basically out of the woods of the patriarchy yet. We got some time to go. That topic will just be something that we will need to address and keep changing. And, you know, each of these is dealing with an anxiety relating to motherhood, relating to creation, right? In mother, bringing a child into a flawed world, also having that be growing in you, but tied to someone else. I think that's another anxiety that's presented in that movie, of your quote creation is not your own. And, you know, this anxiety of, you know, a father who will have rights to this child maybe is not one that will protect the child and have the child in its best interest. La Llorona, we, you know, we talked about it being, you know, a metaphor and allegory for genocide, which it absolutely is, but also it does tackle that very individual experience of mourning children and mourning children that are taken away from you violently. That anxiety is present, I think, not so frequently in our society, but through the lens of this film coming from Guatemala, like that's an anxiety that's present in so many places. And I think people in total safety fear that for their children all the time. But I think in addressing that, the reality that occurs for women is something that's, you know, a social anxiety that is going to come out in horror film. And then, you know, we get to Babadook, which again, it's kind of like very basic metaphor, but, you know, it's the experience of motherhood being alone, but also dealing with a child who is not great. like dealing with a difficult child, like that's tough, you know, that's real. Dealing with a child who isn't understood by others, who's having a hard time, that's absolutely real. So I do appreciate how all three of these really spoke to the experience of motherhood and the possibilities, that those anxieties of possibilities in motherhood itself. Whereas I think Rosemary's Baby, while
Rosemary's Baby is about the womb.
Right. It's about the womb, and it's also about reproduction and
The literal act. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So,
which is actually something not explored a little bit in Mother. She's basically giving birth in the middle of a riot, if that could even be called a riot. But, the actual act of reproduction is often, when it is codified in horror films especially, it's very specific to the organs of the biological female body, and how that in and of itself is the most abject form of human that can be, right? This is where we get into Barbara Creed and the monstrous feminine, which I think is also interesting. And of course, there have been films that have tackled that, all the things from Alien to Rosemary's Baby. But even things like, have you ever seen or have you ever heard of the movie Inside? It's a French film.
No, I haven't.
Okay, I wouldn't recommend watching it. But it's a 2007 French horror film, and it's directed by men, but the two people in it are two women. One is a pregnant woman, and the other one is the woman that wants to take her baby. And she's successful, and there's a very, very, very graphic, alive cesarean scene in it. But it also it gets me, as you said, it ranges from the experience of postpartum depression, which a lot of the Babadook has argued very towards that interpretation, to losing a child and La Llorona, to wanting a child, and as you said, seeing that creation being weaponized against yourself. I don't know if I've asked you this yet, but what I want to ask is, what appealed to you about choosing this theme?
I don't know specifically what the impetus was for me, but I think what continues to appeal to me is, I do foresee myself potentially as a mother one day.
Really? That's really cute. I mean that in a positive way, like truly.
But I've also thought about how I don't think that I want to biologically have children, because I do feel like there are issues with overpopulation, and that's not me arguing for population control, right? But there's issues, climate change, and there's a lot of shit going on in the world that I hesitate to be so gung-ho about bringing an extra person in the world, and making that decision. And I've always felt that I could potentially mother an adopted child. I've always, through nannying, felt like I have the potential to truly love a kid who's not my own biological child. And there's I would have no reservations about that going in full heartedly. But I had seen a few videos that talked about how adoption is weaponized against mothers. And so that, I think that's been on my mind a little bit. I know that wasn't covered specifically in the films, but I've just been learning a little bit more about how sometimes women are coerced into giving their children up for adoption.
Yeah.
So I think it maybe just was a little on the mind.
recently.
That's interesting. Actually, the fear that you mentioned, there's a Korean horror subgenre that is called adoption horror, because adoption was so prevalent in Korea around the times of colonization and the division of the countries. And so, yeah, I forget what exact films, but that's what that reminds me of.
An entire genre?
Yeah, because it was that. There's a really great book literally called Korean Horror Cinema, edited by Allison Pierce. I use it as one of the textbooks I use in my class. And one of the, there's just an entire subgenre. There's about like 4 to 5 films discussed in that chapter of adoption specific horror in Korea, and a lot of it, I remember one specifically, I think it's called Acacia. I would bet $90 on it, not 100, but I think it's called Acacia. And the whole thing about that film, they adopt a boy. It's a Korean boy. It's Korea, but he's not connecting with them, and he sees this woman ghost, and he gets more attracted to the woman ghost rather than his adopted mother. And there's like, again, like a Lacanian sort of thing happening within the screen story itself. No, I love that you chose this topic, because I think, you know, especially the mother figure just has so many, like, it's a gender abjection kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It's a grieving kind of thing, you know, creating kind of thing. And then sometimes it's the villain, and then sometimes it's the protagonist that is being abused and whatnot. But the thing about especially the films that we all watched is that I think we can safely say this, it's sort of like saying that mother is base, mother is home, mother is what we should protect. I actually do think, like, if we're to do like all of the simplifying the fractions and figuring it out, I do think that all of the cases in these films is making the case for the mother.
And, yeah, absolutely.
Interesting, right?
Which is quite different, you know, from what we talked about with Rosemary's Baby and movies like The Brood, where motherhood is really tied to this like biological object. You know, it's very different. And I think that there's an interesting take in horror thinking about mother that way, is like mother as to be protected. But also, I think in the case of La Llorona, like the fury of a mother scorned is something really remarkable. And
yeah,
I mean, like I said, the whole time I was like, yes, girl, you kill that man.
But it's coded as like justified in that film, as you said. Absolutely. Whereas, as you said, like in older films, that probably, especially like I think like Hitchcock and things like that, like it's never coded as like it's justified. It's always coded as there's something diseased about the woman's psyche.
And I think that's what's so remarkable about the film and the way that they reinterpreted La Llorona as a figure, right? Because for those who don't know, this legend of La Llorona, I mean, it varies, but you know, one of the variations is that it's a woman who drowns her children because she's basically her husband left her for someone of his class. And this is going back to the conquistadors, right? Coming in, and the taboos of mixed relations, and you know how that was basically your social standing, is, you know, how much Spaniard are you, you know? And so in this original story, I don't know that this is the main story, but this is what I'm familiar with, is that, you know, she sees him with his new wife and drowns her two children. And then she realizes what she's done. And so the way that this film takes that trope, but then gives the woman so much more agency, right? And she's not sort of this
diseased figure of like, you know, I should say like diseased with grief. Like she has grief, but it's not of her own doing.
Right, exactly. And she exacts for her children. She mm-hmm. is protecting in the afterlife, kind of.
I love the character arc presented by the wife of the general.
As well as
the daughter, but and how through these sort of degrees of separation from the general, like the wife is like the most complicit, the daughter's questioning, and then the granddaughter is very much, you know, it feels initially connected to La Llorona when she comes on the phone in the home as Alma, which I love that they named her Alma.
I know. Yes.
that was a nice clue.
Yeah.
But, you know, the way that the grandmother, the wife of the general, goes through this character arc of complete complicity of in this genocide, you know, she says she doesn't know, but she knows.
Yeah, she knows.
And how she's turned around to then see him as the perpetrator is really strong. I thought that was wonderful. Yeah. Wonderful writing.
Yeah. I'm so glad that you finally watched it. It's all of these films, actually. I think Mother is really underrated. I think people misunderstand it. And I think that La Llorona, I wish it was winning awards right now, but you know, good for Guatemala.
Good for
the future. So how do you feel about that?
Great. I think it's great. I think everybody should go out and watch these three.
Are you working on anything right now, like research-wise?
Well, I'm preparing for a thesis work this coming fall. So
already?
Already.
What is your... though,
not dissertation, because I got to do the thesis beforehand. So it'll be what we talked about earlier, basically an expansion of that article and thinking about the greater United States empire and artists enacting sovereign practice in response.
So. And how have you been finding a lot of the video art? Like, how have you been enjoying that process?
It's been hard with COVID. Luckily, I pursued connecting with galleries who represent artists. I mean, a lot of them are living, so I've been able to see things virtually in that way. I mean, thank goodness for gallery representatives who are responsive. Not everyone is. but you know, that it's been hard with COVID, but maybe soon I'll be able to travel. I will be able to travel soon.
I know there's that Biden said that we're all supposed to be vaccinated by May 1st or something. I don't know, but hopefully that is a real thing. I'm so excited to see where your work goes, because I think it's so important, and I think it always relates back to the pod, though, you know, that we both learn about theory at the same time, both kind of hate our brains. but it's always so much fun to just get to watch any movie with you and, you know, break it apart. Cause I think, you know, you're so intelligent and brilliant. Oh, it's great.
Thank you.
All right.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yes, queen. Okay. Well, we're going to go and text about other stuff and not record.
Sounds good.
Okay. All right.